Joining us now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline, gentleman who will give us some great insight into all of that. He's with SiriusXM. You can read his work in Athlon Magazine. In fact, the 2020 College Football Preview Edition is out right now. He is Braden Gall. Braden, thanks for your time today. Appreciate you being with us.
Hey, Braden.
Yeah, of course. Love talking college ball. Anytime.
So tell me, Andy just threw this out. Do the Ivy Leaguers get it, or are they just making their money through academics so they could really give a hoot about college football, and the other schools need college football to make everything work in the athletic department? It's going to be interesting to see what they announce in a week or so.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Ivy League is sort of its own beast, right? Division II is sort of its own beast. FCS is sort of its own beast. They all operate it. And frankly, you could argue that the MAC and the Big Ten are different sports. Like, you could argue that from a financial standpoint, and you'd probably be right. So what they do, I'm not sure really dictates or depends much on the big-time programs. I mean, if you're looking at Penn State and the Ohio States and the Michigans of the world, I'm not sure what the Ivy League doing will depend on what they do. You are seeing programs around the country announce large deficit budgets for 2021. And, you know, Iowa, I think, announced yesterday that they're looking at a $15 million budget deficit for this year. Alabama is at like $22 million, something like that. Like, does anyone think that Ohio State football is ever not going to be a thing? Like, I just don't think that big-time football programs, they'll take their losses, and then they'll come back the next year and everything will be fine. And so, again, that doesn't mean that some programs at those schools, non-revenue programs, won't be affected by it. Of course they will. But if you're an Alabama fan, a Georgia fan, a Texas fan, an Ohio State fan, a Michigan fan, whatever, you know, if you care enough about your program, which they all do, they're going to make sure that you know, as long as there's a campus, there's going to be a football team at some point. So whether that's in the fall or who knows what that's going to look like. My bleeding heart does not go out to the people that make fortunes on this stuff, though. So that's not the people I'm overly concerned about. I'm not really worried about Nick Saban's contract or Jim Harbaugh's contract or, how much Gene Smith and the Ohio State Athletic Department makes. Like, that's just not the people I'm worried about in this equation.
A lot of questions there. Let me start here. Do you think football needs a czar or a commissioner of college football?
I mean, it sort of almost depends on the climate. Right now, it certainly would feel that way. I mean, some centralized leadership would probably be good. I would argue, though, that I think all the conference commissioners of the Power Five, they are in extremely close contact. So it's almost more like a governing board at this point, where the five Power Five conference commissioners are largely in contact every day, all week, trying to sort of come up with something. Because, I mean, the NCAA is sort of functions loosely as that, but we know that they don't have a lot of teeth. We know that they don't have a lot of power. Mark Emmert's just sort of a guy that, you know, Ohio State, Michigan, and Alabama are the NCAA. The NCAA is just a collection of schools, and it's just an organization. The schools are the ones with all the power, and the conference commissioners are the ones with particularly the most power. And so the fact that those five men have been sitting around discussing all of this and trying to come up with the right solutions is probably the best thing we've got right now to a czar. I don't think a czar can handle, you know, you go all the way down to D3, you're talking hundreds and hundreds of football programs and thousands of athletic programs. I don't think one person can really handle that. Could one person handle Power Five football? Probably so.
Right.
I think you could have one person in charge of the 65 Power Five programs and sort of implement stuff that makes it more uniform across the board, whether it's health risks, pandemic risks, or even scheduling issues or whatever. I think that's where you can kind of see maybe someone playing that role and maybe streamlining the process and being more efficient.
Braden Gall joining us. He's from SiriusXM Radio, Athlon Magazine as well. Braden, here we sit. It's July already. And it's not going to be too long until they're supposed to be practicing and getting ready for a football season. Yet you see positive case turning up all over the test cases. Clemson really hit with a lot of positive virus tests. Do you feel comfortable that this thing's actually going to happen this year?
Oh, man. It depends on the week. I would have been about 80% positive a couple of weeks ago, but definitely not as nearly as much anymore. I think that has changed to probably 40-50% now, and I think as long as we don't have some sort of centralized plan to deal with all of this stuff, other than just sort of like, let's see what happens, as my dog totally agrees here, that it's, you know, I'm just there's no way that you can limit liability with a bunch of parents and their kids. You know what I mean? Like, you can't, it's not like you can collectively bargain medical issues for 130 athletic, you know, football programs. Like, you just can't do it. And so I don't know how, you know, the cost of testing is and the turnaround and diagnostics is extremely expensive. I don't see how you can just, like, test a program once and then expect it to just, like, it's not like a wave. You're going to have to consistently be testing people and quarantining. And like, oh, here, these five guys went out and went back home to wherever. They're going to come back. They need to be tested and separated, right? Like, it's just going to be constant, a constant flow of testing and diagnostics and quarantining, testing and diagnostics and quarantining. And I don't know how you do that without, you know, some sort of collectively bargained health plan in place. And that's where the pro sports, I think you're seeing this in Europe. I think the pro sports can come back. They can collectively bargain away those liabilities and get paid large sums of money and play in front of no fans. Well, that's not the way college football is going to work. And so I'm just, every state is different, obviously, too. Our Arizona just canceled, you know, all of its athletes coming back to practice. Kansas State and Houston have already suspended their voluntary workouts. Like, you've got dozens of players testing positive all across the country and at every different program. So I am hopeful as usual, as everybody should be. I am very hopeful about everything. I'm trying to be hopeful about everything. But at the same time, you have to have sort of a realistic view of you know, getting 400 people, which is what it takes to sort of run a football program, tested and sort of separated and managed appropriately almost every single day. And then you got to do that across 130 programs. I don't know how you do that just from a, you know, from a logistical standpoint and from a cost standpoint. So I'm optimistic, but it's decreasing every day.
Wow. So let me throw this one at you. And at first when I say it, it kind of makes my stomach cringe because I don't think you can do it because you'll lose maybe the top 100 college football players. But what if they did move everything to the spring? Because I got to tell you, if I was a kid that thought I was highly considered to be a top 20, top 25 pick, or first-round pick in the NFL draft, maybe even first three or four rounds, I don't know that I would play spring football next year for fear of getting hurt and for the same reason these guys don't play in bowl games. Is it logistical? Is it feasible to move the entire season to the spring? I hear a lot, like even in Ohio, I hear about these proposals about, you know what we could do? We could just switch the sports seasons. We could have the spring sports play in the fall and then have the fall sports play in the spring. And, I mean, is it logical to do that? I think the drawback, as I just said, would be your top 100 players that could go in the NFL draft that are like, man, I'm not risking injury if I've got a chance to make a lot of money.
Well, and that's just, like, to your point, that's just a very small percentage of the people. But what right. about, and I've talked to a lot of coaches about this, and almost every single one of them agrees that there's just no possible way you can run a season into March. Like, now, could you do, you know, maybe a four-game stretch? If you wanted to do half of a conference season in, you know, September and October, you take a break, you pause the whole system, maybe you let some steam out of the kettle so that there's not too much pressure on the system. And again, this is all assuming that people can be managed safely and have, you know, sort of be healthy through this process. And then come back and maybe do the back half of your eight-game conference schedule, let's say, right? Let's say it's the Big Ten. You get five games in October and 1 week of November. You pause the whole thing. You let the system sort of take a big breather. You bring it back and you run four games back in January. Maybe you could do that. Maybe. Anything into March, almost every single coach has been like, that's insane. There's no way you can do that. You got the combine in February. And that's just for the 700 or 800 people, 900 kids that go. That's just a top percent.
Right.
The bigger concern for most people is how can you play a season into March or April, and then give them 2 months to recover to come back for camp in July? Like you can't, like you just can't ask a bunch of amateur athletes to do that. It's just not healthy. So I don't think it's a possibility of a full season. I don't think it's really a possibility of even the six-game season, which I know Jack Swarbrick at Notre Dame has presented, a six-game in the spring, six-game in the fall. I think it's more likely that we see non-conference games maybe axed, some checks reissued, and then you maybe look at, let's see if we can get half the conference schedule in. Let's start it, see how the system handles it. Let's play our conference schedule. Everybody, you know, plays in their own league. because every region is sort of affected differently. Even then, you might have, you know, Pennsylvania and Iowa and Illinois all affected differently, whatever. But maybe you have to push pause on that and be ready with a plan to come back and maybe kickstart it during when the NFL playoffs might be happening, right? So,
yeah.
But I think you have to be done. I think you have to be done by January. Like, logically, feasibly, I think you have to be done by the end of January for it to really, truly work. That, and I'm with you. If I'm Trevor Lawrence is maybe a bad example because he's sort of a very he's sort of a different cat, right? Very socially conscious and sort of aware of his situation in life, which God bless him for that. But if I'm Trevor Lawrence and I'm him, or I'm his father or his brother or his best friend or his girlfriend, I'm saying, man, like, what is the point? Like, what do you gain out of this? You've already won a national title. You've played in a second game. You're clearly the number one pick in the draft. What do you gain out of this? Like, think about the risk reward. It's like Zion Williamson. Like, I would never have come back if I was Zion because of the risk reward factor. And that's just a straight, you know, pro con analysis. So I agree, but again, every single thing in 2020 from a sports standpoint has got a big asterisk next to it anyway. We all sort of understand right. that. We know it's going to look and feel and be remembered differently. And as long as we all agree with that and understand it, which I think we all do, we'll kind of take anything at this point. Just give me the Masters in front of nobody in November. I'm cool with that, you know?
All right, so let me give you college football, which would probably be blasphemy. Ohio State, Michigan, week one, to make sure you got it in. What?
I mean, right? Like, as a junkie of college football, like, just seeing it completely tossed into the air like that, like, give me Auburn, Alabama week one. Give me Michigan, Michigan and Ohio State week one. Give it all to me week one, and let's see what happens.
Braden Gall's joining us from SiriusXM Radio and Athlon Magazine. Their college football preview is out right now. Before anybody says, ha, yeah, right, let me throw out. Most college football players are actually college students. All right, maybe at some of the big schools, they're there strictly to go to the pros. We know that. That's okay. That's the way it works. But most of these guys are actually college students, Braden. If colleges aren't able to have classes, are they going to be able to have college football? And I say that as the parent of two kids who are off to college this year and have already been told, at least so far, that like half of their classes are going to be online. And I know Joe Burrow went all online. I know that. But can you have a football team if you're not allowed to have kids in classes?
Well, I think there's a really – so two really big factors in this, and it is really complicated. Number one is it's a lot easier to monitor, test, and manage, you know, a football team, 100 guys, 200 guys, 300 guys, men and women, training staff, whatever, medical staff, and athletes, than it is to manage 55,000 students at Ohio State, right? Like, that's number one. You have to sort of consider that. And two, I think there's a big difference between campus being closed, no classes, and online classes. If there are online classes and everybody's taking online courses and the campus is quote-unquote open, for lack of a better phrase, I think you could see football. Because, again, you can manage a football program far more, insulate it more, protect it more, quarantine, spend the money. It's going to cost you a boatload of money to test all these guys, but you could do it if it's worth it. And still be, if there are no classes at all, if classes suspended and there is no class at all, I do not see there even being like legal grounds for having football players. Because again, these athletes are the best part of the game. The little feudal dictators who run these programs don't ever let us get to know them. We are starting to get to see their personalities more through this process of sort of these athletes with name, image, and likeness, and then racial conversations taking place. All those two things coming together right now, along with the pandemic, which is sort of overlaid across all of it, we're starting to see athletes gain some power and find their voices. I think coaches are going to try to put them back in boxes pretty quickly because that's what they do. They have all the power in the world. But I think the athletes are starting to find a little bit more. Like UCLA players right now are going, we're not playing unless a third party handles our medical evaluations on this. Like, we don't trust UCLA and Chip Kelly to do this. Wow. We want it to be outsourced to a third party to make sure they're objective. That's the kind of stuff you're going to start seeing. And it's good. That's good for the athletes. It's good for athletes to start, you know, finding more power, finding more voice, having a better, lot in the entire organization and the entire business structure. Because, like you said, the ones who play at Ohio State, at Texas, at Georgia, you know, while each individual may not be worth a whole lot of money to the school, as a collective, there is no Alabama football without all those players. There is no Ohio State football without Justin Fields and all those guys. So I think we're starting to see a shift in that a little bit. The question is, what are they willing to put up with? And that may come down to each individual player deciding, hey, I've got a sick grandma. Hey, my sister's immunocompromised. Hey, I'm not comfortable with this. Hey, you know what? Like, it may come down to each individual athlete deciding what's best for them. And, you know, the bill that's going to be introduced in Congress this week is going to, you cannot pull, like, if you start pulling scholarships from players who don't play because they're scared, which of course ties directly into the whole voting issue. Like, I just don't understand how you will get destroyed in the PR world if you are Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State and you start pulling scholarships off players, their ability to better their lives because they're scared of the coronavirus. Like, you are going to lose that battle so fast.
And we're going to see if it happens. Hey, Braden, yeah. Great conversation, and appreciate the insight into college football. Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, good news is I don't think it'll happen. I think coaches are smarter than that.
Good.
All right. Well, see you week one when Ohio State plays Michigan. It'll be great.
Oh, I love it. Sign me up. I'm there.
Braden Gall from SiriusXM Athlon Magazine. Their 2020 college football preview is out right now. Go read it, and you'll get some more great thoughts from Braden. Appreciate it, Braden. Thank you very much.